This is CliffCentral.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Cliff Central, to the Country Duty Show on Cliff Central. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. I am flying solo because Mr. Dumisole has abandoned me for White Monopoly Capital. So, my name is Katlego and my Twitter handle is @handful_K. Please do follow us on Country Duty ZA as well and join in the conversation tonight. We're going to be talking on a couple of issues and it's, I think, going to go with an open line because it's kind of weird speaking to myself. Our WhatsApp number is 079-748-2090 and our call-in line is 0861-555-189. So the reason I chose today's song, Free, is because we're living in this country where we fought for freedom and we fought to be where we are today, and yet we are still fighting the same battles that our freedom fighters back in our oppressive times were fighting. So we're still fighting for better education systems. We're still fighting for better health systems. We're still fighting for black businesses, black banks. For example, the VBS issue that came out this week where the SARB, South African Reserve Bank, has taken them under curatorship due to them not complying with the compliance issues and stuff. And it's really sad that they had to go under that, through this, instead of going through with them in a different way. The EFF statement that they released in support of this as well, just trying to open it up a little, speaks on how SARB is actually one of those institutions that could have handled this situation a little bit better, you know. It happened as well when the Capitec was reported to have engaged in unacceptable financial conduct. The Reserve Bank was quick to act. Mr. T. Matodzi as well wrote a very emotional letter where he spoke about how they have tried to meet the requirements and stuff that the SARB is SARB has been asking them to do, and they were unable to because every single time it seemed that SARB was moving the goalposts further and further. So my question when it comes to this is that, yes, I understand that they were not allowed to do businesses with the municipalities according to the Municipal Financial Management Act, but what happens, what is the consequences that the municipalities that also invested in VBS then as a mutual bank, what consequences have come upon them? Because it's all we're hearing about is how SARB, VBS is the only one that seems to be taking the knock on this, and the people who invested the money, who should have known, because I mean they're the ones who are being governed or that operate under the act, have done nothing. VBS have not come out to say anything or to say that what consequences are coming up from them. So yeah, I'd like to see something that also happens on just to the municipality side. And while we're speaking on banks as well, it's very interesting to see that the Gupta people have lost the appeal in court against the Bank of Baroda. So that tells me now that Gupta people actually have absolutely nothing in South Africa because their banks have closed down. Their citizenship as well has been denied by the Home Affairs people, as well as in India. So as we were saying in Country Duty the other day, that means that they are effectively stateless. Interesting things that we are seeing in South Africa today. I will be taking your calls and comments and conversation topics with you guys on Twitter @handful_K. WhatsApp number 079-748-2090, and our call studio call number is 0861-555-189. Do let us know your thoughts and views on these issues and more. Another issue that I actually saw this week that happened was the lady who lost her twins at Mamelodi Hospital 2 years ago, and nothing has happened to date. The CEO of the hospital came out on 702, I think it was on Tuesday, well, yesterday, to say that he was not aware of this until last week. And he says it's because his complaints department is very inundated with calls about problems and situations or complaints. And I don't know how I felt about that, because then it just says to me that so many complaints coming in from a hospital, and the way that they were so careless about how they handled the situation 2 years later, and only now, because it's out in the media, do they want to reach out to the lady and help her out with her situation and her emotional trauma that she went through. But the entire time that she was going through this, nobody said anything and nobody felt the need to call her or talk to her. And she doesn't know what to do. She's really distraught. And our health system, this is just one of many stories that happened where pregnant ladies are left out to sort for themselves, or where ill people are lying on the floor because there's not enough beds, or where the staff is just either unfriendly, unwelcoming, and people are going through the worst times of their lives at that moment, and this is what's happening. We need a situation where people are more passionate and more caring. There's more compassion, especially with the principles that they work under, the Batubele principles, where people's unity is what we push for and speak for, and yet we're out here leaving people to suffer in their weakest times. So, yeah, I do have a caller on the line, Dr. Nzikelo Breakfast. He's a political analyst from the Stellenbosch University. Hello, Dr. Nzikelo.
How are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good.
Welcome to the Country Duty Show.
Thank you very much, madam.
Thank you. My name is Katlego, and I would like to talk to you tonight about your point of views. But I'd like to first let you talk to our listeners and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
First of all, madam, I'm struggling to hear you. I don't know if the problem with the line or what. I'm really struggling to hear you.
Okay. Can I just then put you back to our producer, and then we'll try again? On a different time, maybe?
Okay, cool.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. I think we'll try and take a break right now, maybe a musical break or something, before we get back to Dr. Breakfast. That's such a lekker name, Dr. Breakfast. Thank you very much for staying tuned in with us. We're trying to get Dr. Ntikelelo back online with us. I'm not sure if he can still hear us right now. But before we left, we were talking still about the issue with the fight and the struggles that we are facing still in South Africa today. And another thing that really saddens me with our government institutions or government places is the education system. Right now we're looking at Nkrumah School, where there were 89 pupils who were previously who were raped by a security guard, and they sent in a police investigator to come investigate the situation, and instead of protecting the children, he further went and molested two of the girls who were implicated in this. And it breaks my heart, because we're failing our children. And I, as Country Duty, we are trying to have a campaign out that's going to be taking care of encouraging the government to have thorough vetting in the schools, where we can then have teachers produce a certificate of clearance, or a clearance certificate, to say that they have not been previously charged with any of these charges. Because our children, every day you get a new case and a new story about a child who's been molested or a child who's been raped at school, and it affects the children's mentality, and their futures going forward as well. It's just something that's just, it's heavy. It's very heartbreaking. Before we went on to our break, I had said that we were trying to talk to Dr. Ntikelelo. I'm going to try and get back to him on the line, and he's going to be talking to us about the land debate a little bit more, as well as the political aspect of it. Dr. Ntikelelo, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can, madam.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm in the south, even though you speak very soft, but it's fine. We can carry on.
Really? Okay, I'll try and speak a little louder.
No, it's fine, madam.
Hi. It's so awkward that you're calling me madam.
Okay.
My name is Katlego.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So could you please just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay. I'm a senior lecturer at the University of Stellenbosch. As you pointed out earlier on, in the Faculty of Military Science, teach military political science, which is about civil military relations, national security related issues.
Okay, that's really interesting. That's really nice. And so, okay, I'm just going to jump straight into it because I'm awkward like that. So what do you think the political issues around, if there are any, land distribution is, or the land debate, the biggest ones?
Okay. I think what is quite interesting for me is that the land issue has not always been a policy standpoint of the ANC. When you look at the historical trajectory of the ANC, the land issue has always been associated with leftist organizations like the PAC and AZAPO. PAC is guided by Pan-Africanism, so the land issue has always been at the heart of Pan-Africanism and also black consciousness. Even though the ANC has Freedom Charter, which makes reference to the land issue, but it has never stressed the issue of land as opposed to the articulation of the PAC and AZAPO. As a result, PAC members and AZAPO members have always been ridiculed by ANC members. So it's quite interesting how things now have turned out. I think the land debate within the ANC was inspired by the so-called radical economic transformation. So I hear that the conference that was held in December at Nazareth nearly collapsed due to disagreements around the issue of land. So the ruling party had to strike a deal, basically, in order for it to function as a unified force. So that's how the issue came into the national agenda. That's how it came into the picture. So it came into the picture as a compromise. That's why even government itself, I don't think that within the executive institution, within cabinet or within the ruling party, it is supported by all and sundry. And the people who are pushing it to the next in the ruling party, it's those ones who are associated with the ideology or the idea of a radical economic transformation. So that also speaks to one of the pillars of the EFF. That's why the EFF has committed itself to reward the ANC for having supported basically what it stands for by, you know, planning to give it the municipality in PE or in Nelson Mandela Bay. So I think that's basically.
Okay. So with that said, then one would say that the EFF is a flippity-floppity team then. So wherever they're going to be getting what they want, that's where they will go. Not that they have denied it, but I mean, that just speaks a lot about their stability or their consistency.
You know, in politics, they say that there are no permanent enemies or permanent friends. I think EFF is over the moon that the ANC is prepared basically to roll out, you know, the land reform policy, and also it sees that as something that it has championed, you know, because it is the one that has brought this matter into the mainstream politics. Like I said, I mean, the issue of land has not always been the policy position of the ANC. So the ANC has tried basically its level best to keep up with the ESF, you know what I mean? Because it seems as if this thing of land now, it resonates very well with the majority of people or with black people in general. You must remember that land is not only about the economy, about identity, about race, but also I think it has cultural and spiritual attachment.
Attributes,
you know what I mean?
To it. That's so, very
so
true.
It's something that is very emotive to black people in general.
Mm. But I mean, having you can't. It's not something like you said. It's very emotive to black people, and it's something that you can't use as a politicking game. So I understand. Yes, fine. At the conference, they needed an app, or currently because of previous failures, or you know, people's names we won't mention, who brought the party into disrepute, trying to now come back or gain momentum. They can't just go and make empty promises about the land, because it's going to then cause havoc in the country.
Yes,
so they would need to be able to deliver on the things that they are speaking about.
Yes.
Even today, this afternoon, when Ramaphosa was speaking or answering questions in Parliament, he still doesn't have a detailed approach or plan as to how he's going to go about doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
look, okay.
No, go ahead.
Sorry for, I'm keeping it. You see, my view is that in terms of levels of analysis, how we analyze policy, when, and I don't say this in a disrespectful way, but when ANC members, rightfully so, when they're making policies at conference, I'm not sure that those policies, when they are made, they are linked to budget and other complexities are taken into account. You cannot cut and paste a policy from the ANC conference to government, because in government you have bureaucrats, you have technocrats who are going to question now the operationalization of that policy in terms of budget and feasibility and other security risks. Basically, like you said earlier on, that if this thing, of course, I'm paraphrasing what you said.
Mm-hmm.
If this thing is implemented wrongly, so it might pose a threat to national security. It might also pose a threat to the economy. You know what I mean? So it might worsen the situation. I think that's why now people like Ramaphosa and other people are saying that the public also needs to participate, basically, which is part of democracy, because one of the hallmarks of democracy is public participation. So I think that is the rationale, basically. I do think that maybe the president is hoping that maybe, you know, the public might say the exact opposite, because I'm sure, like I said, I mean, race also is at the heart of this.
Yeah.
So I think the majority of white people might be vehemently opposed to it. And then the government will have to strike a balance in terms of how it appeals all and sundry.
Mm.
That's why basically it cannot just introduce it or roll it out like that. You know, it has to go out there and hear the views of everyone.
Okay. So I've lost track of my thought here.
Let me go
back onto Twitter and go into to Twitter and read a couple of tweets. And we have one here from Zico, and he's calling me out for calling the EFF flippity floppity. He says that they will work with anybody who pushes their mandate. Which is all great and stuff, but I mean, we need people who are also going to be able to stand up for what is right or stand up for what needs to be done, regardless of whether it agrees with them or doesn't. I'm looking right now at how they are handling the EFF, for example, the DA coalition that they had with them, where they're trying to twist their arm to agree with what they want them to do, and threatening to break off or take down Ethel Trollope up in the Eastern Cape.
Mm.
Mm. So we do. It's great that they want to have to, you know, push their agenda and have make sure that their agenda is going to be done. And I hope that they're going to be able to do the same thing right now with the land when it comes to the ANC, because right now they've gone over to the side of the ANC, and because the ANC is pushing their mandate. But how long is that going to last for? Because, I mean, that's I think right now the only thing that they sort of agreeing on, and it's not even completely agreeing on, because what they proposed versus how the ANC amended the proposition that they tabled in Parliament is totally different.
Yeah, no, I think what is interesting is that on the one hand, I think the EFF, as far as I'm concerned, has never had a strategic alliance or a partnership with the DA. You must remember that the EFF, in the main, the majority of its members, they broke away from the ANC, so there's always been this bad blood between the ANC and the EFF. However, I said earlier on that in politics, there are no permanent enemies, nor there are permanent friends. So I think because now they speak the same language on the issues in question, they have decided to join forces, basically, because the DA is vehemently opposed to the issue of land expropriation without compensation, because the DA believes in liberalism, which is liberty, freedom, human rights, and in particular, the right to own private property. So if they're talking about land expropriation without compensation, that goes against what they stand for. That's why basically the EFF and the DA on this matter, they will never strike a deal or speak the same language. I think there will be other strategic partnerships between the ANC and the EFF. I think the ANC, on the other hand, is also trying its level best to reach out to the EFF by, you know, making it to come back to the ANC, and also they're trying to dissolve the EFF, because the EFF is posing a serious threat to the ANC, because you must remember the ANC believes in the liberation of black people in general, Africans in particular, and the majority of EFF members are young people who are disgruntled, unemployed, and the EFF is speaking to the issues of that particular constituency. So the ANC sees that as a threat. That's why it is sometimes, you know, found wanting by having to compromise some of its positions by trying to keep up basically with the EFF, even by adopting policies that are unpopular or that it might not.
Or that they don't agree with.
Yes, exactly. Just to keep up.
So what happens if and after the land issue is resolved? Do the EFF revert back to the next pillar and take on that fight? Or do we see an alliance with the ANC happening or even a return to the ANC, do you think? I know Julius has already come out to say very vehemently that he has no intention of coming back. But I mean, you know, apparently it's cold outside the ANC.
Look, there are many possibilities. The issue is that at the moment, I don't think that Julius would want to relinquish the power that he has and jump ship and go to the ANC, because he's got a grip over the EFF. You know, he can issue commands, he can tell this and that person to do this and that. So now to join the ANC and then be commanded by someone else or by other people, it's going to be difficult for him. Politics is about power. He sees himself as the next president within the EFF. So the ANC will have to dangle a carrot in front of him in order for him to accept the proposal that he must rejoin the ANC. I don't think that it's going to be simple and straightforward, because now he's at the helm of the EFF and he's got his own constituency. So it's not going to start. What is interesting is that, you know, when you look at other political parties that came into the picture that were also perceived to be posing a threat to the ANC, they evaporated or they are very weak now. A case in point is if you look at the ushering in of COPE,
yeah,
UTM, And other political parties, you know, look at the IFP. At some point, it was a threat to the ANC. A whole range of other political parties. So if the EFF doesn't grow, it shrinks, then maybe it will reconsider its position. But as things stand, it is growing from strength to strength.
Yeah, they really are. And I mean, a lot of people have said that the best thing that ever happened to South Africa is Julius Malema leaving the ANC or being kicked out of the ANC, whichever one you want to call it, or whichever way you want to look at it. So you mentioned something about the ANC being or the land reform being part of a radical economic transformation that the ANC is trying to go under. I just want to touch on the economic part of the land reform or distribution. Do you think that it could literally break the economy of South Africa? Because I know one of the major issues that white people who are causing this hysteria about land reform and or land distribution is the fact that they think that it's going to cause the country's economy to just fall flat.
I think the issue of land needs to be interpreted properly. I don't think that there should be mixed messages. If government can articulate a coherent policy position, I think that will allay the fears, you know what I mean? Because as things stand, I think there are many voices, you know, so you don't know exactly what is the policy about, basically. So they need to explain the issue of land in simple terms to all insiders, so people can know, especially investors, you know what I mean? But in principle, I think it's a good thing. I mean, land is the economy. Land is everything, basically. I think people can never have dignity if they don't have land. So this matter needs to be addressed. But I think the modality of how land will be rolled out, they need to be explained, especially to investors, because people are thinking maybe their businesses or their companies will be taken away from them because they don't know what is the interpretation of the government about land.
Okay, thank you very much. Please call us on 0861 155189 or send us a WhatsApp on 0797482090. We're going to take a bit of a song break right now, and we're going to be back with Dr. Breakfast after this. Welcome back to the Country Duties Show. We are still talking on the land debate, and we have got a caller on the line. Hello, Bongani. Bongani, hello. Bongani. Hi, I can hear you, but very faintly. Could you like try and move around a little bit, please? Hello. Bongani. Okay, we'll come back to Bongani. So, Dr. Breakfast, how are you?
Yes, madam.
Okay.
Yes,
that's so much better. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you so much. Thanks for holding. We're just going to be taking a call and a few questions from our listeners if we have any.
Not a problem. No, I'm fine.
Before we left, we were talking about how the EFF and the coalition with ANC going forward would be something that would be a measure of what they need right now. So it's not necessarily something, and also because the ANC is trying to calm down or quieten the voice of the EFF because it's their biggest threat or competitor right now. Instead of feeding off it and trying to better themselves by the ideas that the EFF has. What do you think about that?
First of all, I'm from that part of the world. You know, I think I understand that area, Nelson Mandela Bay. I know what is happening there on the ground very well. The problem there is that let's be honest, the ANC failed dismally to render services to the inhabitants of Nelson Mandela Bay. That's why it was dislodged technically from power, even though the DA did not win outrightly.
Okay.
There have been many reports on corruption in 2009. There was a commission that was instituted by the former mayor and the former MEC of local government, Stello Gopan. I think that's Stello Gopan.
Okay.
A report was released on corruption called the Kabuso Report, mm-hmm. which outlines institutionalization of corruption. Subsequent to that, Busisi Coli was also appointed to carry out also an investigation around the issue of transportation during the 2010 World Cup. Also, there were other allegations that were leveled against certain people. There was a conflict between the political elite and bureaucrats in the Nelson Mandela Bay, and that has had a negative spillover effect to service delivery, basically. So the ANC failed dismally. So the key question for me is, if the ANC and the EFF are going to have a gentleman's agreement about power sharing, the question is the ANC ready to govern there?
No.
Have they sorted out basically their own issues internally? Because there is also instability there in Nelson Mandela Bay.
Yeah. Even
internally, basically. You must remember there was a hullabaloo about Lungisa and blah, 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 when the RSC held its own conference last year. Remember, Lungisa was elected to be the chair of the RSC of Nelson Mandela Bay, and subsequently he relinquished his powers. So Chuni came into the picture. He's a deputy. So there are a lot of issues basically there
that need to be sorted out. Dr. Tsikela, we've got a caller on the line, Reynold, okay. Who wants to ask a question.
Okay.
Could you please hold on for me? Let me just try and get... Hello? Hello? Caller? Hi, Reynold. Okay. I think we're having problems with the lines and getting our callers through. Let me just try one more time. Hello, Reynold? Okay, we can't get a caller through. I have a question on the WhatsApp line, Doc, that I'm going to ask you. There seems to be a huge focus on farms and food security, but what about other land developments, etc.? What negative or positive impact would we see in the future when the state owns the land? This is a WhatsApp message that came in for you. Hello, doctor.
I got cut. I don't know. Okay, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. The question that came in is, there seems to be a huge focus on farms and food security, but what about other land developments, etc.? What negative or positive impact would we see in the future when the state owns the land?
The positive thing is that if the ANC rolls out the land reform, that will be seen as a restoration of the dignity of the African people. It might make a particular constituency happy. The other thing is that if this policy is rolled out, some people, they see it as basically something that poses a threat to the business community, because it means that government wants to take away what belongs to them, because some people, you know, they've inherited land from their forefathers, even though that happened wrongfully. So, it's a very complex
matter,
phenomenon. It's really not simplistic and straightforward, basically, because there are emotions that are attached to it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Ntikelelo Breakfast, and the political analyst from Stellenbosch University. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, ma'am. Perfect.
Thank you. We are going to be also talking now to Zanele Lwane, the deputy president from Black First Land First Movement. She would like to have her input on the land debate. Hello, Zanele. Hello. Okay, we're still trying to get Zanele on the line. She's wants to also have her view. But just in rounding up about what Dr. Breakfast said, the biggest thing about land or something, there's more to the land debate than just the economic factors and the money side to it. So it has so much value to the cultural side and to the roots of South Africans and Africans in general, because a lot of things, this is our home, this is our roots. So, for example, there are people who have their forefathers buried on farms and on lands, on pieces of land that are owned by people or farmers, and they're not able to go in and will visit the gravesites because it's not owned by them or they don't have access to it and the right to it. And this just restores the dignity back to them, you know. We do have Zanele online. Zanele, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Zanele, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Welcome to the Country Duty Show.
Thank you.
Could you please tell our listeners, I already introduced you as a deputy president from the Black First Land First Movement, but could you please tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you stand about this?
Please say that again?
Could you please tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
As you have just said, my name is Zanele Lwane. I am the deputy president for Black First Land First, and we are a Black Consciousness movement and a Pan-Africanist movement that seeks to dismantle the roots of colonialism, particularly in South Africa and also within the African continent. We are of the view as Black First Land First that first and foremost, South Africa is a black country, and it is a country so rich, but yet we are the most unequal society. And half of the population, which is about 30 million of black South Africans, they live in poverty. This is a direct consequence of the uneven property relations, uneven patterns of ownership in terms of land in South Africa, where at least 35,000 families, including white businesses, control and own 80% of productive land in the country. And while as the black majority, we are pushed into the outskirts, we are pushed into the rural areas where the majority of black people are landless in this country and therefore have no ownership of the economy and therefore are unable to have the necessary resources to have sustainable life, and we forever have to subject ourselves to employment, which still assumes a lot of slave practices, where we are paid below the living wage, and we are forever surviving at the mercy of the white settler minority in the country, which controls all sectors of the economy, including mineral wealth and land ownership in the country.
Thank you so much. You're very passionate about this, and a lot of people say that, like last week we were speaking to one of the lawyers, a lot of the lawyers, and they were saying that if we take the emotion out of the issue and we just look at the economic part of the land distribution, do you think that it's something that is feasible in the economic sphere?
Sorry, let me just see if I captured your question correctly. Are you asking me if we think it's feasible to expropriate land in South Africa without compensation?
From the economic side of it, I'm all for expropriation of land for compensation. But I mean, there are people out there who are saying it's going to bring down the economy, it's going to ruin South Africa, and we're going to land up in another Zimbabwe. And I just want to know, how do you then tell them, or what is your response to that?
No, I think those are genuine concerns that even the ordinary people who are black have around the impact of land expropriation without compensation. But our view as a pro-black, black consciousness movement, such as Black First, Land First, we view the issue of land as a historical problem. It's a historical problem because we have the history of colonialism as the black majority in this country. We have the history of enslavement, slavery, and we have the issue of discrimination and apartheid put into law to dispossess black people and making sure that we are left with nothing for many, many generations to come. So before we even answer into the economic implications and rather how land expropriation without compensation is going to affect the economy, our primary position as Black First, Land First, and many other black people as well. It's a historical problem that has not been corrected by the ruling party, and that was not resolved even during the CODESA so-called negotiations pre-1994 and leading into this democratic dispensation.
Oh, true.
And we are of the view as the Black First, Land First that the economy of the country is intact, and where it is today, because of a black majority anyway, that has been turned into a labor force in South Africa to enrich the white elite, which is the likes of the Oppenheimer family, which is the likes of the Rupert family, which is the likes of Maria Ramos, and many other families that control the industry and expressed locally by white monopoly capital. And the question on land expropriation, or rather the concern that arises that is going to have a negative impact on the economy, mostly comes from the white settler minority, and it comes from the life of the real Ramaphosa, who has a proved long relationship, cozy, lovey relationship with white settler monopoly capital in this country. So, for example, when the president of the country would speak of land expropriation without compensation, he would say, yes, we support it, but we must make sure that food security we maintain our food security
and that
does not have a negative impact on the economy.
Mm.
Then our response as the Black First, Land First movement is that we have overwhelming empirical evidence in a country like South Africa that 30 million of black South Africans already live in abject poverty. So the question of food security is very dishonest, because the agricultural sector, which falls in the hands of the white settler minority, they do produce food, yes, but they produce it for exports, food that goes out of the country so that they can make profits and enrich themselves, while the larger majority, which is black in society, is fed GMOs through mealie-meal and many other things. So our position as Black First, Land First is that for sure the economy should be protected, but the key question we should be asking is that the economy at this point is in the hands of white people.
Mm.
We have no economy as the black majority in this country. And the key solution that land expropriation without compensation will bring about is to open up the economy, is to open up an opportunity for what we call the democratization of the economy, where the economy, in terms of ownership, does not rest with a particular race, while the black majority in this country remains landless. So as much as these concerns are there, but we must be very clear and make it clear to our people as well that this is a historical problem that we need to fix as citizens in the country, as blacks who still remain oppressed and who live in poverty and who are subjected to humiliation for the rest of our lives, because we have no country we can call our own.
Okay, that's so what you like, I absolutely agree with you, totally agree with you. And the fears or the hysteria that the white people, as you say, or the white owners and farmland owners are causing, especially around the markets and everything, it's causing quite a bit of a dip in the markets, in the rands, and it's causing a crazy show all around. So, what do you? How do you expect? I don't know how to put this question to you, but how do you, how would you then calm down or calm the fears and the hysteria that's being caused out, that's being put out there?
No, my sister, I think that's a very important question. And again, as the Black First Land First movement, I think not only for us as a movement, but as the black majority as a whole, it's very important for us to always look back into history and to self-introspect and reflect on why South Africa is where it is today and even the continent as a whole. We live in a continent so rich when we look around the globe, when we look at the whole world. But we know that the Africans and the black majority, not only in South Africa, but in the diaspora as well, we are the most poor, we are the most wretched, we are the most degraded people. Why? Because we have allowed, and this is a history of violence and enslavement, where the West represented such as the by the likes of the United Kingdom, Britain, and the USA, yeah, have direct ownership, yes, in terms of the wealth that that the country, or rather the continent, holds.
And
so
owns.
You would think, yeah, of countries.
Thank
you would think of countries such as Libya,
yes,
for example.
Thank you.
How that country at today is so poor, and if you were to take a tour around the oil fields in Libya, you will find multinational companies that do not even plow back into the country, making profits and leaving the people of Libya.
Zanele, I need to interrupt you here because I have one last question for you about your elections. Are you guys really registered to be running for elections next year with the IEC?
Say that again?
As Black First, Land First Movement, are you guys really registered to run as the electorate with the IEC to run for the elections next year?
Yes, so we are registered with the IEC. I'm not sure if many people had been able to notice, because after so many inquiries from Black South Africans, the IEC had to even communicate via social media, and they did confirm that we are registered as a political party, as the Black First Land First Movement, and we are intending to contest. We are going to contest, in fact, the 2019 elections, and we are feeling very confident that we are the only alternative.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, we wish you all the best in the elections then next year, and thank you very much for joining us and taking our calls.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wow, that has been a very interesting show today. We spoke to, that was Zanele Lwane, Deputy President of the Black First Land First Movement. She's very emotive about her stand viewpoint on the importance of land. We have a caller on the line. Bongani, hello. Hello, Bongani.
Hello.
Hi, Bongani. How are you?
I'm good in USD.
I'm good. What's up?
I see we have like 2 seconds to speak before your show ends.
We have literally 3 minutes.
Okay. So although I wanted to say a mouthful, I'll only say a few things. I just wanted to touch on the economic aspect of the land expropriation issue.
Yes.
Because a lot of alarm has been raised, not just in South Africa, but internationally by investors as well.
Yeah.
And really, I think the message that I really want to get out there is, for me, it's quite disappointing that the South African government hasn't actually owned the communication around this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a lot of alarmists who are sending messages to all and sundry, you know, saying things and speculating.
Yeah.
And we do not see the communications departments, whether it's via the government or the parliamentary committee itself, actually coming out strongly. I think the one statement they issued was on the 6th of March, where they basically repeated what the president has said about, you know, this is how we're going to do expropriation, we'll make sure that there's food security and so forth.
Mm.
But having seen the messages that are going out there, people have a right to be concerned because they don't know what they don't know. As a homeowner, you have a right to be concerned because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And no one has come out to say, don't worry, we're not going to be taking your house away from you. We've seen messages coming through from certain political parties, for example, over the weekend, where they are saying the EFF and the ANC are going to be taking people's houses.
I'm going to have to cut your call short, Bangani. So sorry about that, but we will continue.
No, no worries at all, SG. thank you for the great show, and I look forward to hearing from you next week again.
Thank you very much for listening. We will continue on your point of view that you just pointed out about the economic part of the land distribution next week on the show. And we will have economists in to come and give us the viewpoint, the facts around that, so that we do not have the hysteria and we have the facts. And when we go and put down our voices on the land expropriation part. Thank you very much for tuning in. Good night.
This is CliffCentral.com.